Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the March 13, 2024 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being made available via live teleconference for public access. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this combined in-person and telephonic meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting is being recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent background noise and feedback, we ask participants to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel of RI Housing. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and documents and information on each of the actions being taken. If the teleconference portion is interrupted for any reason, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Committee Chairman Kevin Orth will preside this morning. Commissioners and staff, a gentle reminder to please state your name prior to speaking each and every time for the benefit of those listening in by teleconference. And with that, I'll turn it over to the committee chair to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Corinne. This is Kevin Orth. It's now 9:33 a.m., and I call this credit committee meeting to order. Carol, would you please take attendance?
Certainly. Commissioner Barry?
Here.
Commissioner Pryor? Committee Chair Orth?
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cabral?
Here.
Great. Thank you very much. We'll now jump into agenda item number one, which is approval of minutes of the credit committee meeting held on February 7th, 2024. I have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
And second.
Second. Thank you, Sarah. Seconded. Any comments, questions? Okay. Thank you. Would you please take a vote?
Yes. Noting one recusal from Commissioner Barry. All those in favor of approving the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on February 7th, 2024, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have 3 affirmative votes. The motion is approved. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Agenda item number 2 is recommendation for approval of development of Affordable Housing 2 program, otherwise known as DAH-2 funding awards. And with Ann?
Yes.
Presenting this for us?
Yes. Good morning. And before I start, Commissioner Orth asked me to just give a quick update of the current RFP process. So, as you know, we received 77 applications seeking over $340 million. We had far less than that to allocate. The applications sort of fell into several buckets. We had 10 applications for projects that had previously received preliminary approval and were seeking additional funds to fill gaps that sort of developed in their budget as they went through the process. We received 9% applications for new 9% financing, 14 applications for 4% financing, 32 multifamily applications that did not include any LIHTC, 11 home ownership, and a couple of ARP commercial deals. The projects that we're going to talk about today are projects that fall into the bucket of previously approved that are coming back to seek relatively small amounts to finalize their capital stack and move them to firm approval. The process that we went through with those was similar to the process that we're going through with all of the deals in terms of identifying threshold, kind of doing some preliminary underwriting. Obviously, because staff has been working on them for 9 months. We're very familiar with them, so the process was able to be truncated a little bit, which is why we're able to bring them now. But we did sort of apply the same lens to them that we've applied everything else. And I will also note that for every applications that came in, the awards that are being recommended are less than what the applicants applied for. So with that, I'll jump. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Set that up.
Sure. This approval is for, I'm sorry, this RFA is for approval of DAH 2 program awards for 5 separate projects. As I noted, 4 of the transactions received preliminary approval in May of 2023. Generally speaking, these 4 developments are experiencing gaps 2 to 1 or more of the following items: increased construction pricing, lower syndication pricing, and higher interest rates on both commercial, construction and permanent loans. These deals generally have nearly final plans and specs, and once this last gap is filled, should be able to move quickly to closing. The 5th transaction is actually under construction, but experienced some cost overruns due to shortages and delays related to electrical equipment, including switch gears, which seems to be an industry-wide problem. So while reviewing these deals for additional DAH commitments, staff paid particular attention to the following factors just to make sure that we were being equitable across all the projects. The size of the gap for which the developer was seeking additional funding as compared to the overall transaction. The deferred developer fees and consistency with required policies. Any value engineering that they have undertaken or can be undertaken, and we also looked at updated equity pricing, which in most cases had dropped. So these 5 projects applied for funding in January as part of the QAP, and as I mentioned, the other applications are continue to be under review. We are making our threshold determinations in the next week or so. And we'll move into scoring. So hopefully by the beginning of April, we'll have a real clear path for getting to the board for the remainder of the awards. So the 5 recommendations are as follows. The first is Reynolds Farm Senior Housing, Senior Housing 2. This is 40 units of new construction in North Kingstown. The gap is a result of higher insurance costs, which have just really plagued the industry, both on the capital side as well as sort of the ongoing operations side, higher interest rates and lower credit pricing. Their overall development costs increased by almost $2 million, and nearly 50% of the gap was filled with additional 4% equity, higher first mortgage, and additional deferred fee. So we are recommending $1 million of DAH2 to close the remaining gap. And we expect to bring this project to firm commitment in either April or May, depending on receipt of the appraisal and the final due diligence. The next one is Broad Street Homes, which is slated to create 44 units in Central Falls. This gap is a result of higher construction costs, including requirements imposed by the Rhode Island Historic Preservation Commission related to the old police station and courthouse, higher interest rates, and lower credit pricing. Their overall development cost increased by about $4.2 million. They were able to raise about $2.6 million, or 63% of the gap, from other sources. So they are requesting just shy of $1,500,000, or 37%, to fill their gap. And we expect they will get the firm approval in May or June. Ade Bethune House is the 3rd one. This is located in Portsmouth. It is the new construction of 54 units of affordable housing for 55-plus community, as well as a new senior center. Since preliminary approval, their construction costs increased They were not selected for a CDBG grant, and their LIHTC pricing dropped. So they actually had a gap of $6.1 million. However, they were quite lucky. Due to changes in the small area of fair market rents, their development is now located in a boost. So they were able to generate an additional $5 million in LIHTC equity, which I think is really what has made this project feasible. So we're recommending an award of $1,471,000, approximately 24% of their overall gap to complete the capital stack. And I would note that in all three of these deals, part of the gap was made up with increased deferred fees. The next one is Walker Loss. This is the rehab of a historic mill in Lincoln, which will create 126 units, 32 of which will be affordable with incomes up to 80% of area median income. This one also received preliminary approval in May of 2023. Their overall costs have actually increased over $10 million. A lot of it is related to prevailing wage requirements tied to state historic credits, and higher financing costs, as well as overall just construction material costs. They requested about $5.8 million in ancillary funding, but since only 25% of the units are affordable, we sort of applied that metric and reduced their the gap that Rhode Island Housing or the state might be willing to fill to about $1.47 million. So we're recommending an award of $940,000 of DAH. There'll be a simultaneous recommendation for middle income as well. We will note that the developer will need to secure the funding for the remaining $4.4 million from other sources. And these folks have basically said that they can get the closing in July if their gap is filled. So we certainly hold them to that as part of the award. The last one is Parcel 9, under construction, creating 66 units in the Fox Point neighborhood, Providence. They actually requested $1 million, and our recommendation is $100,000 to address cost overruns related to the switchgear and electrical equipment, and that'll be split between their two partnerships. So in summary, we are seeking $5,049,551 of DAH funding in compliance with all of the program requirements. I'm happy to answer any.
Thank you very much, ma'am. May I have a motion to approve recommendation for approval of development of affordable housing 2 program DAH 2 funding awards?
So moved, Marie.
Thank you, Marie. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Sarah. Questions or comments?
Questions? So, and you talked about the tax credit pricing. What sort of pricing are you doing?
I believe, and these guys know more about the details than me, I think we're basically at 90 cents, whereas, you know, when these applications came in, they were probably closer to 92 or 93 cents.
Do you think that the decrease is due to syndicators sort of thinking they knew the market and then it dropped, or did the investor kind of come back in?
I think it's in virtually every case, it's related to the investor.
So they gave a bid earlier, higher, lower?
I would guess that when the applications came in, that this is what we often see, is they get kind of a soft letter from the syndicator who may or may not have an investor. And by the time the project matures, and we do require that they go back, so within 60 days, I think, of board approval, we get kind of the final updated LOI, and that's, you know, by then they've locked in their investors.
Do we require, like, multiple bids?
We do. Three, I think. And what we've noticed sometimes is some syndicator, they'll go out and they might seek four or five, they may not get four or five bids back. And I'm sure you've seen this. Rhode Island's small, so some of the syndicators have the same investors.
Yes. And there's demand. Yep. A lot of demand chasing.
Right.
One last question.
Sure.
So are you noticing the same syndicators doing all these deals, or just six?
There is one syndicator that does more deals than any in the state. But, you know, for example, Reynolds Farm has Hudson as the syndicator. I don't remember who the investor is, but, you know, that's we haven't seen Hudson do a deal in 4 years, so it's great to see them come back. A couple of them have Boston Financial. Redstone has put in some bids, but I would say NEF sort of gets, you know, for every three, two of them go to, NEF ends up being the investor. And I think that's part of that is related to the fact that we still, many of our borrowers are nonprofits with, limited balance sheets, and that's, NEF is comfortable with that, more comfortable with that than other syndicators might be.
Yeah, they do a good job.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Stephanie or Sam? Do you want to see the girls first? I'll follow up.
Sure. So could we take a step back, I guess, and talk about how we arrived at these decisions? I know you looked at the gaps on each of them. You looked at the developer fee, you looked at whether the construction cost increases were reasonable. Is there a threshold about per unit or anything, you know, of that nature?
So we did, one of the things that we looked at, we had our design and construction group look at all of these deals. They're actually looking at all 75 deals, but we started with these 10. To try and break down to see if there were any outliers in terms of construction costs. And what their analysis showed is that there's actually a pretty consistency across all of them. They're, the ones that have a historic feature might be a little bit more expensive, but they're all, the cost is the cost. And construction is 75% of the cost of these developments, right? The reserves might change a little bit, the acquisition cost, but it's really the construction that's driving these.
Mm-hmm.
If it was one or two, I might be concerned, but every single one of them and the pricing is really consistent across the board. So I think this is unfortunately what it costs to build these developments.
And so what did the analysis show in terms of cost increases, say, from January 2023 to now?
I don't actually have that chart in front of me. I apologize for that.
We're not going to do math in public.
Yeah, exactly. but I think what I think is interesting, and we've talked about this before, we've always asked for kind of the minimal plans and specs when we do our applications. And maybe this is a holdover because, for many years we only worked with nonprofits and we were sensitive to how much they would have to spend in pre-development costs. So we really don't get much more than schematics. We have pushed to get geotechs and things of that sort so that we know if there's unsuitable soils. But I think the answer is that when the plans and specs are 90% done and they get their final pricing, no matter how much value engineering is done and teamwork is done, it sometimes results in cost increases. And, some is more and some is less. In the case of Ade Bethune, their original contractor has had some real challenges, wasn't able to, sort of fulfill their obligations on a previous deal, so they weren't able to move forward with them on this deal. They had to go find another contractor. They're all using pretty much the same subs. It's a limited pool.
Which, again, is a cost issue.
Yeah. So.
I think the one thing, though, the biggest takeaway, and this has been, an iterative process as we've gone through, the developers came to us and said, look, we got this. This is the size of the problem. And we said, okay, we're going to look at what we can do. What can you do? And everyone understood where we were coming from and, undertook, whether it's value engineering, whether it's going out and seeking other funding, whether it's, kind of working the deal six ways from Sunday to see how they could either assume or reduce some of the added cost. They were great partners across the board in working through these issues, and that's how we got here today.
Right. I think James makes a really good point. In most of these deals, the amount of money that we're putting in for the gap is not the majority amount. Like in a couple of cases,
half or so.
It ranges from 10% to 40%. Because, as James said, we're really pushing them to find money in other places, defer more fee. So I wish I had a better answer, but I don't.
Okay. I wanted to dive into the process and make sure that we were, funding the least amount necessary to move these deals forward.
Yeah.
And that it was obviously equitable across the board to all the developers coming in.
So you get a lot of deals and not a lot of resources, relatively speaking, so we're trying that with everybody.
Yes, appreciate it. I don't
have the follow-up on that.
Yeah, I don't have any more.
Oh,
please step in, Stephen. I thought I'm good.
Are there other deals that are likewise requesting topping off that did not make this list?
Yes.
That's a special case, but anything else?
Rosebrook. Yes, we have several others. There were we weren't quite ready to bring them to the board because they needed further analysis and further review of the cost. So the
expectation. How many would you say?
I can tell you that. I believe it's four. It's four deals. As we continue through our analysis and the expectation is they'll come forward in either April or May if they're being recommended. We're trying to get all of this completed by May.
And what, I'm not questioning whether there were good criteria used, just curious what they are. What advanced these but held those?
The three of the four that are still outstanding, we're seeking a lot more money, so I think we wanted to kind of really go through that analysis. And one of them, is seeking the Priority Projects Fund, so we're working with your office to sort of figure out what gets paid for with PPF and then what would the remaining amount be. So the other ones, but in general, they were seeking $4 to $5.5 million in those other projects. So we really wanted to step back and just make sure that our analysis was correct.
Because the dollar amounts are high.
Mm-hmm.
We'll use the same form of analysis for those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A couple more specific questions. The notation Walker loss is that there's a remaining $4.4 million gap. Can you just say a little bit more about how we expect that to be filled?
We expect the developer to find other equity to do that, given the sensitivity to how to the timeline for spending the SFRF money, their window is going to be pretty short. Obviously, we haven't had the conversation with them yet because we needed to sort of identify how much. We do have biweekly calls, so they have some sense of what's going on, and they have intimated to staff that they knew their request was aggressive. And
And this is Seth St. Jean. Like Ann said, we meet with them biweekly. They knew that they probably weren't going to get the full $5.8 million gap that they wanted to. So there's still some avenues they can go down to, value engineer, look for more, and and go down to, you know, look at some other shorts and stuff and kind of rework the deal as needed. So I think they can make it work.
At the end of the day, it will be additional equity.
Okay. That's helpful. On parcel 9 Penrose, seems unusual, may not be, you can correct me, that the project is in construction and we're coming back. Really rudimentary question. Why would we? I recognize there'll be pain for the developer. Their assumptions may not hold, but it's under construction, so why would we?
I agree with you. That's why the recommendation, and it's up to you guys to decide if that's a valid recommendation, was reduced from $1 million to $100,000 for just that reason, right? You close the deal, you're a developer. Developers by nature, I mean, it's a risky business, and some are more risky than others, right? So we thought that based on the analysis and kind of the overall request, that the issue around the switchgear and the costs associated kind of fit within the parameters of a gap. It's not a lot of money. So it's up to, you know, I'll defer to you folks as to whether or not it's a reasonable request.
Thank you.
Do you have any?
Good for now.
Yeah, okay.
I just have one
yes,
question.
Yes, please.
And I don't mean to do anything in
any way. Okay. No, I'm nervous.
Projects that have not come back yet for the financing, is it that, or maybe you don't know the answer to this yet, but is it that they're getting financing elsewhere? Are they not getting into, are they not having any
increased? No, that's a great.
Or are they doing something that?
It's a great question. So over the last couple of months, we've brought, I think, 4 deals that were previously funded. At least 2 of them received money from the City of Providence, right? So they didn't have to come back from us. One, quite remarkably, was able to hold all of their costs. I think part of the reason for that is a project that had applied previously. So their plans and specs were quite honestly, farther along, and some of it was preservation, so I think overall the costs were a little bit less. But it's a great question.
I'm just wondering if there's a group out there that's got the magic recipe for
no.
Like everything is rising.
Yeah,
rising.
Absolutely.
It's rising, so I'm just curious if there's...
And those are national trends. They're not specific to Rhode Island. We do have some Rhode Island-specific wrinkles, but nothing... It's totally out of line. I think, you know, every deal is different and they have different things that go into them that, you know, as Ann said, may have held the cost or may have made them eligible for other funding that some of these projects were not. You know, not every municipality has money like Providence to put into a deal, certainly. So each one is its own, you know, its own kind of special thing. Yeah.
That's a great question.
One more quick question. On Walker Lofts, I know Rhode Island Housing is providing the, how about the construction loans?
So we're not providing the senior debt or the construction loan. It's, I don't know who their, I don't remember who their lender is.
I think it's WSFS is the lender. WSFS, I'd have to look again exactly with that.
We are providing middle income, and I think it received a CRP award, which is the community revitalization, and so the award that we're, the DAH is a new award, and the one that's going to come up shortly is an increase in the middle income based on the revised guidelines, which allow a higher amount on a per unit basis.
Okay, so the $21 million that's permanent?
Yeah, that's not Rhode Island Housing.
Okay,
it says what? Sorry, we'll fix that. Yep, that's a default from our remote. We will fix that in the board action.
Okay, and do we still be confident this is a solid sheet?
Yes.
But at the same time, we're going to keep them on a short leash.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Corinne, would you please take a vote?
Absolutely. All those in favor of recommending approval of development of sustainable housing to program funding awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
No abstain.
Okay. We have 3 affirmative votes and 1 abstention from Commissioner Pryor. The motion is...
I'd like to just offer a quick comment on my abstention.
Certainly.
First of all, I want to express gratitude for the good work that's gone into the presentation today. I would like for, as we evolve our processes, given that there's a lot of interlock between the Rhode Island housing team and the housing department team, both outstanding teams that I feel a great deal of appreciation for, I'd like to make sure that, for example, there's the Rosemont, did I get it right? Rosemont?
Rosebrook.
Rosebrook, mm-hmm. Forgive me, Rosebrook, that term doesn't stick in my head. The Rosebrook project, and there are other points of intersection where our teams must collaborate. I want to see that happen more, and I'm not privy to the decisions yet that led to some projects being left behind and some advancing today for the purpose of topping off approvals. It was probably outstanding and fully meritorious reasoning, but we only got a brief explanation today. In the constraints of time, that's understandable. But I'd like to see some of this happen better between the 2 housing teams of the state of Rhode Island. So I'm just going to abstain in committee. Even by the time it gets to the full board, I may be for it. But I just want to say to everyone that I'd love to see us, this is not falling on any one party. I'd like to see us do a lot better in communicating in advance. So for today, I feel not sufficiently informed for a full vote, given the way in which this process should be conducted.
Understood. So you would like more information on deals not being funded?
That's one key point. I'd also like the 2 teams to begin working in earnest together.
Okay. Is there, do we have any discussion on that, Carol? Is that?
Well, James and Ian have been taking the lead working with
housing. We have, once we got all of the projects that were, that did request Department of Housing funds, we sent those to the Department of Housing. They've had it for a bit. We have had a preliminary meeting already. We're meeting again on Monday to go through all of those projects. I can't speak to the internal process at Department of Housing and their review, but when we got these in January, the ones that Department of Housing had requests were sent over. So, as it has been.
James is accurate. There was a preliminary conversation. There's another one coming up.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously after this committee meeting. I think we can do, the constraints of time are absolutely paramount that we observe them. We've got to keep moving. But even given that, I think we can do better. I think we can start to, in earnest, put processes in place where nothing is a surprise for either party. These are, for all intents and purposes, I feel a sense of ownership and appreciation to both. I'm not speaking of only the department's interests. I think to get this right, it has to be worked out together. There's probably more up to speed that has to occur on the department side because it's new. And our Deputy Secretary, Deb Flannery, is, you know, essentially a shop of one. But we got to do it. And it shouldn't be, there shouldn't be mystery remaining by the time we get to a committee meeting. I do not want to slow things down. I do trust this team. So I deliberately, I'm not disrupting the proceedings. I'm making the point, once I abstain, I'm explaining my decision.
Okay. I think we had our vote then, so we can move on to the next.
That's correct.
Thank you. Agenda item number 3 is recommendation for approval of middle income loan program funding awards.
Oh, middle income next? Nope, CRP is next.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Recommendation for approval of community revitalization program funding awards. And Dean, will you be presenting? Thank you.
Thank you. Dean Harrison. This request for action for approval to award CRP program funds to one project known as Lockwood Plaza. Lockwood Apartments Phase 1. Similar to the DEH action just discussed, this development applied for funds under the recent consolidated request for proposal. The request for the additional gap funds were due to an increase in construction scope based on an updated capital needs study. Also similar to DEH, while reviewing deals for additional CRP commitments, staff paid particular attention to the following factors to ensure that equitable review across all projects. The size of the gap for which the developer was seeking additional funding as compared to the overall transaction. Two, deferred developer's fee in consistency with required policies. And three, value engineer undertaking. And four, updated equity pricing. Staff is recommending an award to Lockwood Phase 1, which serves residents below 80% AMI and is located in a QCT, making it eligible for the CRP. Lockwood Phase 1 includes 108 townhouses units per family. Currently, more than 75% of the households have income below 30% of AMI and receive housing choice vouchers. The CNA that was completed determined that replacement of the windows and some additional exterior improvements was necessary to ensure 15 to 20 years of useful life for the structure. These construction-related items, along with rising interest rates, contribute to an overall funding gap of approximately $2,640,000. The developer has requested $950,000 in ancillary funds, for which staff is recommending an award of $950,000 in CRP funds, contingent upon completion of the standard underwriting. In summary, we are requesting approval of $950,000 for Lockwood Apartments Phase 1. Thank you, and I will can take any questions.
Thank you. May I please have a motion to recommend approval of Community Revitalization Program Funding Awards?
So moved, Maria Berry.
Thank you.
Second.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. Comments about this action? I'll jump in, Dean. From my perspective, if I get these cost overruns, I go back to the seller for a price cut. I don't see that the fact they bumped it up and then took a seller note. So is the buyer also related to the seller?
Yeah, I will jump in because we just had a development officer leave and we were splitting up projects and this one ended up in my lap. So. Yes, this is related. So if you recall, Lockwood is actually has 209 developments, so there's actually two phases to it, currently both sets of buildings, both phases, are part of one financing structure. So they're both being paid off and refinanced as part of this. The acquisition price actually increased, which allowed them to generate more equity. They took back a loan for the difference. So that's, and they're deferring additional fee as part of this. That's kind of how that worked out.
Again, I don't see why they don't just, so what is the sales proceeds going towards?
The sales proceeds are basically going toward paying off the existing investors, paying off the existing loan. That's kind of the bulk of it, basically.
Is there any meat to cut out of that? It just seems like that would be the first place to go instead of increasing our subsidy.
Yeah, we can certainly go back in and ask that question.
$83,000 unit acquisition price. If it's in that kind of shape and it needs more money to go in, I would think it wouldn't be worth that much money on the front end.
Certainly can have that conversation.
Okay.
If there's a way to sort of reduce that $950,000, happy to investigate.
Any other comments or questions about this one?
I had a quick question on the EOF.
Yeah. So, right, so they got $750,000 for all 209 units. It should never have shown up at 750 in just one phase, so this is just a rectifying the fact that it was, you know, 375 for each phase.
Do you know who the investor they're paying out is?
I don't, but certainly find out.
I don't think I should recuse myself because I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know the answer, but I can certainly find out.
Yeah, I'll recuse myself just.
We can certainly have that for you before the board.
Okay, so to move this one forward, I guess, with the condition that you will see if there can be a reduction.
Absolutely.
That might be
sure.
Justified.
Any place that we can save a few dollars, I'm happy to appreciate the question.
No other comments or questions about this one. Corinne, please take a vote.
I'm going to mute myself now. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, Commissioner. Would you like to request a new motion if Commissioner Berry is withdrawing hers?
Oh, certainly. I have a motion to approve recommendation of approval of community revitalization program. Conditioned upon staff going back and seeing if there's a possibility to reduce the amount of subsidy.
So moved.
So moved by Sarah. I'll second. And now we can take a vote.
Thank you.
Refusing.
All those in favor of recommending approval of Community Revitalization Program funding awards as presented at this meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
Abstain.
Yes, and we have one abstention from Chairman Pryor and one recusal from Maria Berry. We have two affirmative votes.
Thank you.
Right, we can now move on to recommendation for approval of middle-income loan program funding. Dean will take this one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Dean Harrison. Yeah. This request for action is for approval to award middle income program funds to one project known as Walker Lofts. Similar to the previous request for actions, this development applied for funds under the recent consolidated request for proposal. The request for additional gap funds were due to rising construction material costs, prevailing wage requirements tied to the state historic tax credits, and higher financing costs related to higher rates. The same criteria was also used for the review, the size of the gap for which the developer was seeking additional funding as compared to the overall transaction, deferred developer fees and consistency with the required policies, and three, any valid value engineer undertaken. As noted in the previous DH2 request for action, the developer requested $5.8 million in additional ancillary funds. However, only 25% of the units in the development are affordable, so staff has applied that percentage to the gap request, thereby reducing the request to $1,470,000. Staff is recommending $530,000 a middle income award with the recommendation for the DH funds previously. Happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you very much, Dave. I have a motion to approve recommendation of approval of middle income loan program funding awards.
So moved.
Thank you, Maria.
Second.
Thank you. Any comments or questions about this one? I would like to make a comment I appreciate staff looking at the amount of subsidy per affordable unit, and I think that was very appropriate to do.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree.
That was all set.
I don't have any other much questions myself. Any? No. Corinne, would you please take a vote?
Certainly. All those in favor of recommending approval of Middle Income Loan Program funding awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions?
One abstention.
We have one abstention from Chairman Pryor. And any nays? Three affirmative votes. Thank you. The motion is approved.
Great. Thank you. And so that's the last important item. There are a lot of us actually saying to pipeline report.
Only that, you know, in addition to the remaining 70 applications that staff is working on, we are also working diligently to try and get, we've got five or six deals in active closing now, so we are working really hard to move those through the system as well. So we'll see some additional closings in April and May.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Any questions about that?
Thank you for all you're doing.
No, I'm just the messenger. The staff is doing a great job, and it's been a great, I think, an interesting experience and a lot of learning going on. So, it's
and
great.
And Ken is bringing on some new development.
Yeah, we just hired two new development officers, so we're very excited. So we'll actually be able to move that much quicker.
Yeah, a lot of work, especially with a lot of the changes. We see it too.
Yeah.
It's like to get to closing and multiple rounds.
Right. So I'm just curious, you know, in your kind of, you have the national view, are you seeing deals coming back and, you know, they get awards and then they have sort of these challenges around pricing and construction costs and, you know, some developers are better at it than others, but costs are...
Yeah, definitely. Definitely construction costs, interest costs, insurance costs, switch gears, can't get them, exact same. I haven't seen as much on the pricing and the tax credits, so that's one thing I think just we should keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that may be driven by, you know, developer relationships and that sort of thing too, so, but I'm sure with the bidding process, they're doing the best they can.
Right.
So I think it's something to keep an eye on.
I think...
There are places where insurance is impossible.
Yeah. And, you know, what I've been seeing and hearing is, like, there's a lot of education happening now about, you know, you're pricing this in your business, getting insurance and really getting specific on insurance. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the initial quote is coming back, like, you live in Rhode Island, there's a lot of water, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like, but it could be in, you know, northern Rhode Island, not near anything that is causing water. So, and sometimes it's not even somebody, you know, in the local market that's making those decisions. It's maybe many times someone that maybe is overseas that's making that decision. So I think that might be something to even think about, you know, especially for developers on, like, ways to kind of look at this to moderate it, you know, because I think those initial cuts are really tough.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a
problem. Yeah, we are planning sessions, educational sessions for our new fiscal year, so that might be a great topic.
Yes, definitely, because I do think there are ways to drill a little deeper. Not that it's going to go down to maybe historical levels, but maybe it's a little bit better than that original quote.
Good point.
I'm seeing anecdotally actually subsidy seeking more work. This is the first I've heard of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's probably more on a national basis, but maybe that could pretend trying to attract some out of state to come work here.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Right.
We are seeing that.
Yeah.
The Haynes is now doing business in Rhode Island, and typically they stayed in Connecticut. So we're seeing contractors.
Some of our newer deals have contractors we haven't worked with from out of state, which is great. You know, the more competition, the better, certainly.
But there's definitely less happening on the market rate side, so
it's
going to probably create some more opportunity for more people.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate the feedback.
Yes.
Motion to
adjourn. All those in favor of adjourning this meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion to adjourn is unanimous.
Great. Thank you.